world of deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. It's the David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Thursday, the 30th of April, year of our Lord, 2026. Well, today we're going to take a look at the Supreme Court. They've made a ruling about gerrymandering. A lot of people are saying, wait, this is, we had set-asides or based on race. This is overturning the Civil Rights Act. We're going to take a look at the implications of that and really what is happening with our elections and then what is happening with our wars. As Ilhan Omar said, she made a reference to World War XI because somebody wrote it down, I guess, in her staff as the Roman numerals. I guess she could be forgiven because we're in a constant state of war. Perhaps we have had 11 wars since the World War, but things are only getting worse. People in Wall Street who adopted the acronym TACO, don't worry, Trump always chickens out. The tariffs aren't going to be as bad as they are. Now they're saying about the war, it's nacho, and we'll tell you what that means when we come up. And then OpenAI is talking about their plans for how super intelligent artificial intelligence is going to serve mankind. I think we've heard that before, haven't we? Oh, and Al Gore has switched his opinion on climate change. We're now going to go into an ice age again. Well, let's begin with the Supreme Court. And we have the Supreme Court, first of all, before this big decision about gerrymandering that negated parts of the Civil Rights Act, the set-asides for racial districting and that type of thing. First of all, the Supreme Court sided with a pro-life pregnancy centers that were being targeted by the New Jersey Attorney General. This is a guy who, in response to their previous Supreme Court decision, saying we're going to get the federal government out of this, overturning Roe v. Wade. This is a guy who, in response to that, back in 2022, he put out consumer warnings and alarms, telling people, don't go to these pregnancy crisis centers. Go to Planned Parenthood instead. And he has been joined at the hip with them. So much so that he was telling these different pregnancy centers that he was demanding and threatening them with contempt of court and other things like that, that they had to give him all kinds of information about their donor list. So the Supreme Court has now unanimously backed a group of faith-based pregnancy centers in New Jersey to allow them to challenge this in court. Now, I don't know why they needed to have the Supreme Court's permission to challenge this, but evidently some of the courts said they didn't have standing or something, and they appealed that. I'm not sure exactly the basis of it, but what was at the core of all this was really heinous. The as I said before, there were 28 categories of documents being demanded by the New Jersey Attorney General, including records with donors' names, phone numbers, addresses, and places of employment. The sweeping subpoena did not explain why the Attorney General sought these records. It also warned twice that failure to comply may render the group liable for contempt of court and for other penalties. So the guy who did this, the Attorney General in New Jersey, a Democrat, of course, his name is Plotkin. He's strongly pro-abortion. He had issued the consumer alert that I mentioned before after the reversal of Roe v. Wade in 2022. He'd announced pregnancy centers. His office collaborated on the notice with Planned Parenthood, and he urged women to distrust pro-life centers. Go to the pro-death centers. That's where you really need to go. Just amazing. You know, Karen worked as a volunteer for one of these pregnancy counseling places, and you know, they're just trying to help people. They're not trying to kill anybody. But that's what Planned Parenthood is doing, killing for hire. And it's truly is amazing what these people are doing. The Supreme Court said that Plotkin's subpoena caused an ongoing injury to the pregnancy center's First Amendment rights and sent the case back to the lower courts for further proceedings consistent with this opinion. So perhaps they lost in the New Jersey courts and they appealed to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court does do that from time to time. They say Here's what we think about this unanimously. Maybe you should rethink this at the lower court level. So perhaps that's what's going on. An official demand for private donor information is enough to discourage reasonable individuals from associating with a group. It's enough to discourage groups from expressing dissident views, said Justice Neil Gorsuch. I would imagine they could apply that same logic to the 8647 charges that are out there as well. We'll talk about that later. But anyway, there was a brief that was filed by the GOP states, several of them, and filed a Friends of the Court brief. There was also Friend of the Court briefs filed by Democrats, and you had a lot. You had 18 Democrat state attorneys general, led by the Massachusetts Attorney General, Andrea Joy Campbell, backed New Jersey's efforts to intimidate. And so just think about that. That's why I say, when you look at the state elections, that is really crucial. Don't ignore the power of the states to be evil or to be a defender of what is right. The state elections and local elections really do matter a lot. The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, the Arizona Legislature, and various other pro-life groups have supported the center who was appealing this and saying, we're not going to be forced to turn over all of our records to you, which then brings us to the Supreme Court decision that everyone is talking about, and that is the weakening of the Voting Rights Act. The Supreme Court says AP, this is their establishment media version of what happened. The Supreme Court on Wednesday hollowed out a landmark civil rights era law that had increased minority representation in Congress and elsewhere, striking down a majority black congressional district in Louisiana, opening the door for more redistricting across the country that could aid Republican efforts to control the House. And, of course, in the wake of this, you had Marsha Blackburn, senator from North Carolina, not North Carolina, I lived there for so long, I think I still do, anyway, senator from Tennessee, who's running for governor here in Tennessee. She immediately said, we need to make sure that there are no Democrat representatives from Tennessee. There's only one that is out of Memphis. And so we can see how this is going to be used. Here's my opinion about all this stuff. As a matter of fact, Memphis and Nashville are strongholds for Democrats, and they have a large proportion of black people who live in those cities as well. And what happened was that you had a Democrat representative from Nashville that was redistricted out of their district. He said, well, in spite of all the polls showing how popular he was against his opponent, he said, with the redistricting, we couldn't get around that. And that's the way it really does work, folks. You know, think about this in the broader terms, because this happens both ways for both parties. And I saw this happen in North Carolina. I've talked about this many times. In 2008, Obama carried North Carolina. But by the midterms, people didn't like what they saw. And so what happened was there was a backlash in North Carolina in 2010. All the elections went to Republicans, except for congressional races. It was the first time Republicans had had control of the state House and Senate since the Civil War, since Reconstruction, the very first time. And that was the backlash on it. However, in spite of this massive sea change of people going from Democrat to Republican in North Carolina, you had zero change in the congressional delegation. But 2010 was a census year, and so the new Republican majority redistricted after that. And then after that, the next election, you had a big change in the congressional makeup that shifted towards Republicans. Now, what's the lesson of that? Well, the lesson is that even though when you look at the election in 2010, even though North Carolina was swinging heavily Republican, not a thing changed in congressional representation because of the Democrats' gerrymandering. And then when the Republicans did the gerrymandering, it went the other way. And the Democrats began suing over and over again. You know, probably ever since then, they've been suing about redistricting. I don't like gerrymandering. I don't like the government. I don't like a political party picking the voters for any reason, for race, for political affiliation, for any of these reasons. They do the same type of thing that they do to juries, where they rig the jury by jury selection. You have to understand the way that elections are corrupted is far deeper and earlier than electronic voting or voting by mail. Those are just additional cherries on the top of a massive pile of excrement, folks. When you look at what they actually do, they pick the voters with the gerrymandering, and they can make sure that their party gets elected. That ought to be a stop right there. To say, we're not going to do gerrymandering, we're not going to do it for race, we're not going to do it for anything else. Of course, they typically do it by party. But I feel that what they ought to do is, the only way you're going to shut down gerrymandering is to tell them, you're going to draw contiguous geographical districts, you're not going to have these winding snakes that run down a road and hop from one side to the other, you know, picking the people one by one, because they have the ability to do that with computers. And so you have to say you're just going to have these large geographical areas that are going to be numerically based. You're going to have about the same number of people in this district as we do over here, but you're going to be forbidden from looking at any characteristics of these people. You can't look at their race, their political party. You can't look at their religious affiliation, whatever information you can get, and they can get a lot of information, believe me. That's the whole purpose of geospatial intelligence. They've been working on that since the late 1990s. And now with artificial intelligence, they have the ability to go much deeper. So we've got to stop that. We've got to make it illegal for the people who are drawing up these congressional districts to look at anything other than a just gross headcount. We're going to have about the same number of voters in each of these congressional districts. End of story. If you do anything else, you're going to be pawns in the hands of these two corrupt political parties that I despise. You should despise them as well. You should look at what both of these parties have done over the longest time and not want to have anything to do with them, and not give them the ability to determine who the voters are going to be in a district, who's going to get on the ballot. They control that very heavily. Who's going to get into the debates? I mean, if we can't select the candidates instead of them selecting the voters, if we don't have an open ballot, if we don't have open debates, what's the point of an election? That's the real bottom line here. So don't get caught up in the civil rights stuff and racial quotas and districts. They shouldn't know anything about you. It ought to just be a headcount situation. That's what I believe about this. No rigging is the only way that you're going to be able to stop the gerrymandering with something that was done from the very beginning. I mean, they didn't have that kind of granular information, but it started at the very beginning of America. Gerrymandering has been around forever. They were the ones who came up with that. They drew a district. The guy said, it looks like a salamander, and so they called it gerrymandering. I don't know if the guy's name was Jerry or not, but you know, you can do that type of thing by figuring out, well, I know that in a city, the people are predominantly voting for one particular party or the other, typically Democrats. So we're going to go through this city, and we're going to include that. That's going to be a safe congressional district for the Democrats, is what they would do. But you need to, as much as you can, prohibit that, and certainly prohibit them from going down to the granular detail that they're currently doing, where they can go down the street and jump from one side to the other. It was that way 30, 40 years ago when I was running for Congress. They had a congressional district in North Carolina that did exactly that. It snaked through, and I forget the name of the road, but it just followed this road, jumping from one side to the other, picking the political party that they wanted to stick into that congressional district. So they go back to Lyndon Johnson's civil rights thing, law 60 years ago. And I just got to say that if I see anything with Lyndon Johnson's signature on it, I would immediately throw it in the trash can. Maybe that's what's happening.
Get that out of here.
That's right. deep six that. 86 that, yeah. So anyway, this was something that was a pretty strong decision by the Supreme Court. Kagan said, the upshot of the decision is that states can, without legal consequence, systematically dilute minority citizens' voting power. Let me just say that the gerrymandering dilutes everybody's voting power. What the gerrymandering does is it empowers these political parties. And, of course, they fight each other, but they're not about responding to us. We have absolutely nothing, that no input into this. We can't pick the candidates. We can't see them debate each other. And they pick who the voters are going to be in a particular district. And you can't get around that, quite frankly. It's such a powerful thing that they do. Meanwhile, the response from Republicans in the White House says this is a complete and total victory for the American voters. Well, no, actually it isn't. Because there's still, as long as they're doing gerrymandering, as long as they've got the ability to look at various factors. I mean, the other thing they can do, they can play games with not just with race. They can look at your income and other things like that and make assumptions about that. So it is a sordid business, this divvying up by race, said John Roberts. Well, the reality is that they're divvying up this by political party. That's what's really happening. The political parties have assumed and usurped a lot of powers that they should never have. So that gets us back to Marsha Blackburn. And this is what it looks like. And this is what it's going to look like. The opposite of this is what it's going to look like in Democrat states. You think this is only going to go one way? If you're caught up in this partisan nonsense, again, the founders of this country wanted to have nothing to do with political parties, partisan clubs, and all the rest of the stuff that everybody wants to identify with. It was anathema to them. She said she's calling for a special legislative session to eliminate all Democrat House seats in Tennessee. Well, that shouldn't be her decision. And it shouldn't be the politician's decision. Again, that tells you right there they don't want elections, right? We're going to decide how many the other party is going to have. And you see this happening everywhere. It's happening in Texas. It's happening in Florida. It's happening in California on the other side. And you've got some Democrat states that are doing this as well. And as a part of this, that's why I talked about the Memphis representative, Stephen Cohen. He is the only one out of the congressional delegation from Tennessee. They have 8 Republicans and 1 Democrat. That's 1 Democrat too many, she says. Well, I would not necessarily disagree with that. I would just disagree with her methods, which I think are really important. I think the means that you do is more important than the end in most cases. The end never justifies the means. And I think this is the wrong way to go about this. They want to double down now on gerrymandering. And so we're going to take a quick break. And
hold on before we do that. We've got many comments. And of course, there's something very special happening today. It is my dad's birthday. And so we say happy birthday, David Knight. And we have many birthday wishes. Which we're going to get to now. Exactly. You got to have a little fanfare now and then. North American House Hippo is now a monthly supporter on Rumble. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Boost says, happy birthday, David. Wally Walrus, happy birthday, DK. And he says that twice.
Steichen,
420, happy birthday, David. Steve Evs, oh gosh, happy birthday, David. Kuda Bing, happy birthday, David. I'm Marty. Thank you very much for the tip. That's very generous. He says, happy birthday, David. Have a fire extinguisher on cake standby just in case. I handy. Happy birthday.
I actually did that, I think, when I turned 50. We tried to get 50 candles on the cake. Couldn't get them all lit before one side burned down into the cake.
You got to blow hard and blow fast.
Yeah. Well, I'm blow hard. Yeah, that is. Thought it could work.
Be My Valentine says, happy birthday, David. North American House Hippo. He says, and thank you very much for that tip. He says, I had previously mentioned the robot dragons where I work and their applicability to police robot technology, but at least they couldn't fly or breathe fire. Well, now they can fly. The fire coming soon, I suppose.
And he works down in Orlando. I'm not sure which one of the parks they're doing that at. Maybe they're doing that. Oh, is it Universal's got a Harry Potter thing? Maybe that's where that's happening.
Could be. But
yeah, it's going to get kind of crazy real fast at these parks, I think, as the robot technology goes up. Of course, we've all always had. Do we still have that anymore? Do I still have the Olaf dying on the road? Yeah, we got this. While we're talking about robotic technology at the various parks, take a look at this. This is Olaf, the snowman, and they've actually created a little robotic snowman. But, of course, these are early days, and Olaf is on the bleeding edge of technology. There he is, talking to people, waving his stick arms, and and his nose falls off and all the rest of this. So, yeah, that's hopefully that won't happen to the flying dragons, I imagine. They're much larger, and it'd be more consequential if they crashed to the ground.
IRS machine gun, thank you very much for the tip. And he says, happy birthday. Yes. Stealth Patriot, happy birthday, David, and prayers for good health. And thank Defy you. Tyrant 1776 from Kick, happy birthday, DK, ML, to you and your family. Not sure what ML is.
Much love?
Much love. That makes sense.
I'm guessing. Well, thank you for that, and thank you for the prayers. And by the way, I've got this piece of paper here to remind me. I've forgotten for the last couple of days to mention it on the show. But a longtime supporter of the show, Dave and Anne-Marie, Dave is having surgery scheduled for tomorrow. And I won't go into the details of it, but it is a very serious surgery. And he says, by God's healing hand, I'll be coming home. And so I would just like to ask you to pray for David and for Anne-Marie, and that this would go well, that they would be at peace, and that God would give them a peace, and that God would be their healer. You know, we go to these physicians, and they treat us. We need to understand that it is God that heals us. We should always look to God for that. And so that is our prayer for David, and also peace for Anne-Marie. Peace for David as well, as he's looking at this surgery. So sorry to hear that. But David, when you return home, let us know, okay? Let us know how that went. And I want to thank Mary Ellen Moore, because she is matching funds today. Mary Ellen Moore is with freemindsfilm.com. And just want to tell you about one of the documentaries. They got several documentaries that are there. We've got a trailer for one of them, do we, Travis?
Yep, I've got it ready to play.
Shadow Ring, and this is about the history of the CFR, history of false flag wars, many other things that are still happening today. Why are they happening? Because they're going unchecked. And why are they going unchecked? Because a lot of people don't understand it yet. And so it's very important to have these documentaries, to pass them around and share them. And so you can go to freemindfilms.com. And you can buy the film, or you can go there and you can watch it for free with commercials. And we got a trailer for that. By the way, go ahead and play the trailer, if you can.
Part of the reason we went into Iraq the main reason we went into Iraq at the time was we thought he had weapons of mass destruction. It turns out he didn't, but he had the capacity to make weapons of mass destruction. But I also talked about the human suffering in Iraq. And I also talked the need to advance a freedom agenda.
To have any people being paid by the CIA who are contributing to the National News Services, AP and UPI.
Well, again, I think we're getting into the kind of detail, Mr. Chairman, that I'd prefer to handle in executive session.
The event seems to be something other than what it truly is.
They're playing chess while we're not even playing checkers yet.
Either you are with us or you are with the terrorists.
You're now hitting critical mass.
And he says you won the 2004 election.
Because if you listen to most media, a conspiracy theorist or conspiracies are all urban legends.
I think that we have noticed over the years that some of the events that led up to war were not accidental.
My vital need was the information available in Washington from the intercepted dispatches, which told when and where Japan would probably strike.
Could we have been lied to about everything? Is that even possible?
So the whole thing's a fraud to begin with.
People get caught up in debating if MSNBC has a better perspective than Fox News or ABC, NBC. These are a very narrow window of information.
If you don't toe the line, if you're not official corporate media, it doesn't matter how big your audience is. We're going to control the conversation. If you can be an appropriate mouthpiece for government, if you're not going to challenge the paradigm of statism, we will give you access.
So if you understand who these people are and you understand what their mission is and how they think and what their ideology is, then most of the mysteries of the modern world, how come we're getting into this mess, or why are we doing this, and so forth, they become easy to answer.
And every one of those people knew it was a lie, and they sacrificed the lives of 60,000 American boys.
All human authority is jurisdictional and limited.
The fact is, the superclass exists. That's the problem.
What kind of world government will this be? It might even be worse than war.
Without a massive shift in global consciousness, it's impossible.
If you had a one world government, it would set up the most unrestrained tyranny in history.
That's right. You have a one world government and the most unrestrained tyranny in history. That is what we're looking at, folks. That we're right on the cusp of that. People need to understand where this is coming from. And of course, ultimately, the power that is behind all this, the greatest conspiracy, is satanic. And we have to understand that that is the foundational thing. So we should not be surprised when we see these, the satanic child ritual abuse, the pedophiles and all the rest of this stuff. This is what these people are. And as you look at the push for psychedelics and other things like that, true pharmakia, true sorcery that's out there, and you look at the reinvention, in my opinion, of the Tower of Babel, that's basically the way these people see artificial intelligence. They're going to become like God. That's the age-old lie from the Garden of Eden, and that's the same lie that we saw, the pride, the hubris of the Tower of Babel. And, you know, quite frankly, when you look at artificial intelligence, it really has provided kind of a debabilizer, which is what Scott Adams talked about. Was it Scott? Doug Adams. Doug Adams talked about in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. You don't even need to put a fish in your ear. It just debabilizes everything. So again, we're at the
what
point.
What if you want to put a fish in your ear?
Why would you want to hear what these people on the other side of the world have to say about it? But of course, that's where we are right now. But where we are right now is at the point where we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back, folks, after this quick break.
Listening to the David Knight Show.
Hear news now at APSradionews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
Welcome back, folks. Sorry to cut you off, but we have more comments and tips. G Talent 60, thank
you
very much.
You're taking the breath.
Exactly. Happy birthday, David, from G Talent 60. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Owen 61, thank you very much. Says happy birthday, David. And Wally Walrus, thank you. He says, double up. Well, thank you all very much.
Thank you very much. And I want to thank Ryan for that clock that he got us. We thought, where should we put it? And we thought, well, we don't have a background at all for Travis. And so Travis set up the video camera there. And that's going to be our background in there. Thank you so much, Ryan. I really do appreciate that. For the love of the road, you'll see him in various formats that are there. But thank you so much for that. Let's talk about the war. Of course, Trump is now telling his aides to prepare for an extended blockade of Iran. This is exactly the opposite of what the doctor has ordered for the health of the global economy. An extended blockade is not good for anybody. It's not even good for Trump. He's going to wind up killing the Republican Party, and so perhaps that's the purpose. The more I look at this guy, the more I think that he is a Manchurian candidate for the globalists and the Democrats. Certainly is working out that way. And so much so that Wall Street has a new acronym instead of a taco. They're now talking about nachos. And this is nacho economy right here that we're seeing. It's not going to be one that you want. Trump has instructed aides to prepare for an extended blockade of Iran, said U.S. officials, targeting Iran's coffers in a high-risk bid to compel a nuclear capitulation. Tehran has long refused to do so. Well, quite frankly, they had inspectors there, which Israel has never had inspectors. Look at anything that they do. They were open with the books. And U.S. intelligence, as well as international inspectors, said they're not doing what they're being accused of by Netanyahu. And you also had the guy that they now assassinated had put out as a religious leader, as well as a political leader, he had put out a fatwa against nuclear weapons. But when you look at it now, I think every nation on earth, especially in the Middle East, has to come to the conclusion that the only way we can stop from being attacked by Israel or by the United States under false pretenses is to have nuclear weapons. Nobody's talking about attacking Pakistan, for example. And so when we look at this, remember we had people like Ben Shapiro mocking those of us who are saying this is a quagmire, this is a path to a global depression, a global war. He said, oh, listen to these doom and gloomers. No, it's going to be in and out. It'll be real quick. It'll be a piece of cake, right? And so these statements by Ben Shapiro are not going to age well. And we'll play those again for you in a little while. But tomorrow is the day, supposedly.
The real question is, what statements of Ben Shapiro's have aged well?
I can't think of any. But, you know, tomorrow is the magic day, right? We have a constitution that says that Congress will declare war. They've ignored that and they passed their own law, which, again, you can't just ignore the constitution and be a legitimate government. The government in Washington, folks, is completely illegitimate. Republicans and Democrats are usurpers. They have no authority. They swear to uphold the Constitution, then immediately ignore it on everything. You even had Speaker of the House, the squeaker that's in the House, Mike Johnson, saying, we can't have search warrants. Can you imagine how long that would take if we encumbered law enforcement? Yes, I can imagine encumbering law enforcement. I can imagine that's what exactly needs to be done. But the utter contempt that the Speaker of the House has for this is just jarring if you look at it. And so tomorrow, so they ignore the Constitution and the fact that Congress needs to declare war. And they passed a War Powers Act that says that the president can go to war without Congress. But he can only do so for 60 days unless they agree to it. Well, guess what? Day 60 is tomorrow. They're not really even talking about it. And the mainstream media is not really talking about it either. I've only seen, as I look around, I only see one article that is talking about this impending deadline that is happening tomorrow. Because, you know, they're going to find some way to just rubber stamp it or to move on or to ignore it. I mean, if they can ignore the Constitution, can't they ignore their own law that they created? I guess they can. Who's going to stop him? Trump is not planning on stopping. I mean, he knows tomorrow is day 60. He's not worried about any of this stuff. He's planning to extend this blockade, this Trump embargo. The Trump embargo is going to be much worse than the OPEC embargo. I said this from day one. It involved a much bigger blockage than ever happened with OPEC. And because of the war that is there and because of the constant antagonizing of Iran, and that's exactly what is happening. You know, Iran says, don't attack our oil facilities or we will attack everybody else's oil facilities. So what do? They attack Iran's oil facilities because Israel wants the entire region destroyed like Gaza so they can take it. In recent meetings, including a Monday discussion in the Situation Room, Trump opted to continue squeezing Iran's economy. Well, just understand that you're also squeezing the global economy. You're also squeezing the pocketbooks of Americans, and the Trump administration doesn't care about either one of those. If they can destroy Iran's economy, they're more than happy to destroy the global economy. They're more than happy to destroy your household budget if they can do that. That means absolutely nothing to them. So Wall Street is looking at this, and they came up with the acronym TACO, Trump Always Chickens Out. That was about the tariffs, and that was meant to assuage people's concerns, the The stock market was getting rocked from one direction to the other as Trump would put on tariffs and take them off, then put them on and take them off, ramp them up over 100%, then drop them again. It was absolute chaos. So to try to stop the chaos of his capricious, arbitrary whims, acting as a dictator, acting as a king, they said, don't worry, Taco, Trump always chickens out. Don't worry, you know, don't, in other words, ignore this guy. Whatever he's telling you is a lie and he's going to change it in a little while as well. So don't trade on this. But he has really roiled the markets with this oil stuff. And so now they've got another one, Nacho, which means not a chance that Hormuz will open, right? And that's the bottom line. He's going to keep this thing blocked one way or the other. And, of course, Mark Levin was very proud of the fact, I know when he told him to do a blockade. So it's like, yeah, okay, let's give Mark Levin the credit he deserves. It's just like Trump bragging about the vaccine. I'm the father of the vaccine. I created that thing. It's like, okay, all those deaths are on your head then. And when you look at Mark Levin, the global depression, the deaths that are coming from this, that's all going to be on his head as well. So Bloomberg columnist Javier Blas revealed Nacho on Wednesday. He said he didn't come up with it. It was a trader who told him that's what they were talking about on Wall Street. And again, not a chance Hormuz opens. So it said the shockwave has been sent through global markets. Oil prices extended their rally on Wednesday. Brent crude climbing above $114 a barrel. The U.S. benchmark, West Texas Intermediate, surpassing $103 a barrel. You know, when all this began, Iran said, you're going to see oil at $200 a barrel. And now you've got some financial analysts and banks saying, yeah, we could see oil at $200 a barrel. This is another thing that was poo-pooed by the Zionists and the warmongers. Oh, don't worry about that. It's not a problem. This is going to be a piece of cake.
What they meant was it's not a problem for them. You know, they have an unlimited amount of money to play with.
That's right.
Don't worry about it. We'll be fine.
That's right.
Well, I wasn't really concerned about you in the first place, bud.
That's right. Gasoline prices have surged by 40% in just 2 months because of what Trump has done. In 2025, Wall Street coined the code TACO to try to keep the market cool. But now they're looking at this and they're saying, well, this guy is completely out of his mind. Trump is threatening steep tariffs. The markets plunge, and days later, he backs off in a way that prompts a rebound. That was what Taco was about. However, with the Hormuz impasse, it's very different. The frustrated president has gyrated between claims that Tehran is begging for him to end his blockade, and then he switches around. He has outbursts that are threatening to have more strikes and to kill everybody in the entire civilization if they don't reopen Hormuz. So what is it? You know, this is the thing about Trump. He can't get through a speech without contradicting himself. Clearly, you know, we're winning. But hey, if you guys don't help us, there's going to be consequences for NATO and all these countries that don't help us. And the same thing happens really with Pete Hegseth. He went before Congress and they asked him questions about the war. And notice how this guy, in just a little 2 minute speech, completely, he tells two different contradictory lies in 2 minutes because he can't make up his mind which liar he's going to follow. Is he going to follow the Trump lies or is he going to follow the Netanyahu lies? So he tells lies from both of them, and both of them are telling different stories.
Nuclear facilities have been obliterated. Underground, they're buried and watching 24/7. So we know where any nuclear material.
Reclaiming my time for a quick second here. We had to start this war, you just said, 60 days ago, because the nuclear weapon was an imminent threat. Now you're saying that it was completely obliterated.
They had not given up their nuclear ambitions, and they had a conventional shield of thousands.
So Operation Midnight Hammer accomplished moment. Nothing of substance. It left us at exactly the same point. Place we were before. So
their,
much so
their facilities were bombed and obliterated. Their ambitions continued, and they're building a conventional shield.
Right, let me try again.
It's the North Korea strategy. You know this very well. The North Korea strategy was use conventional missiles to prevent anybody from challenging them so they could slow walk their way to a weapon. President Trump saw Iran at its weakest moment, took an action to ensure in a way that only the United States of America could do.
Yeah, well, you know, what Hegseth is doing is the George W. Bush strategy. That is to just lie about weapons of mass destruction. So first he wants to say that it is imminent, we have to attack, because that's what Netanyahu's been lying about for 30 plus years. You know, any week now, they're going to have a nuclear weapon. And so it's imminent, and we have to attack right now. But then Trump told everybody he wiped out all of their nuclear facilities. So it can't be both. And Hegseth is going to pretend that he doesn't know that he just caught himself in a contradictory lie. But we all see it. I think he knows it, too. I'd hate to think the guy is so incredibly stupid that he doesn't understand how the lie they made. But, of course, we look at Ilhan Omar. She made an interesting comment about World War XI this week.
The last time the Alien Enemies Act was invoked, it was used to detain and deport German, Japanese, Italian immigrants during World War XI.
Welcome to the Quality Learing Center.
She's a graduate, a proud graduate of the Quality Learing Center. Yeah, World War XI.
Doesn't it feel nice knowing these are the types of people that wield power over us?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm so glad Ilhan Omar is in office.
Yeah, it would be very frustrating to think that politics was the highest power that's out there. But we know there is a higher power, no doubt about it. Well, $200 oil, nacho, could tip the world into recession, says one global bank. Of course, we don't need the word of a global bank. We already know that. Anybody with any common sense knows that. The prospect of oil reaching $200 a barrel doesn't seem so far-fetched now. Given the front month of Brent oil contract was trading at over $114 a barrel on Wednesday, up 88% so far this year. Trump did that. Trump did that for Netanyahu. You know, Ron said 200 quite some time ago. Again, as I said, Ben Shapiro poo-pooing that. The Zionists poo-pooing that. It's going to be so easy, they said. But even in the base case where oil prices don't reach this high, the French bank expects a first-half average of over $100. The global economy is dangerously close to how the BNP, the French bank, defines a recession. They're forecasting 3% GDP growth. They define a recession as anything that is less than 2.5%. So we're splitting hairs in statistics here. And depending on how you calculate it and measure it, you know, just like the inflation rate or the unemployment rate, we have armies of bureaucrats who can spin and twist that data to give the result that they want, but we know what it looks like. The $200 scenario is joined by two other related possible causes of a recession: worsening supply chain bottlenecks and tightening monetary response policy in response to inflationary pressures. So both of these things could happen. These drivers would likely be concurrent and would reinforce each other in the event of a more prolonged conflict. One case in point is helium, of course, the direct input into microchip production, as we pointed out from the very beginning. You have shortages of rubber and chemical components have already been reported in Asia. So far, some of the chip manufacturers have gone to great lengths to say, we're not worried about helium yet. We have some supplies of that yet. However, they've already seen shortages of rubber and chemical components in Asia. The war could also affect, of course, food prices, grain prices in the Northern Hemisphere as they are trying to purchase fertilizer. But Trump is in full nacho mode. Not a chance. Hormuz opens. And that's where we are with this guy that's lied us into war yet again. How many times will they tell the same lies about weapons of mass destruction? The same lies about Iran and nuclear weapons. And you know they're lying when they go back and they look at, I mean, we see this same type of thing happening with Al Gore and the climate change people. They cherry pick their time range, you know, they're going to pick a point that is to their advantage in the statistics so they can show the trend that they want. So they go back at a point where they had a little mini ice age, and that's their starting point. And so then they make the case that there is global warming until now. And now Since that hasn't been happening, Al Gore is flipping the narrative at this point. But they do the same thing with the war agenda. You know, you always have Trump and all these people go back 47 years to 1979 and say, for 47 years, look at what Iran's doing. They just out of the clear blue sky, they attacked our embassy. Don't know why they did that at all. They don't want to go back to where our involvement with Iran began in 1953. And so we've had 73 years of America bringing in tyranny, a police state, a surveillance state, a king, all the rest of the stuff, overthrowing their elections, doing a coup. That's the true history. And it makes all the difference in the world what your starting point is, just like with the climate people. Well, Trump's approval rating, whatever the starting point was for that, is now sinking to new lows as the Iran war is driving affordability concerns for Americans. Like I said, he doesn't care about the American economy. He doesn't care about the global economy. And perhaps he doesn't even care about the midterms if he's going to keep going down this path. Perhaps the only thing he cares about is pleasing Netanyahu. Because otherwise, none of this stuff makes any sense. As John Mearsheimer said, why does Israel spend so much lobbying money and buying of politicians? Well, it's because the things that they want us to do are not in our interests. If they were in our interest, they wouldn't need to pay the politicians to do them. Politicians would be more than happy to do things that are in our interest. But if they're going to work against the interest of Americans, if they're going to work against the interest even of the global economy, they need to be paid. And that's the purpose of AIPAC and the rest of these organizations. So again, you look at Trump's approval, it ought to be inversely proportional to the price of gas at the pump. And it may be working out that way. As one goes up, the price goes up, his approval should go down. And I hope it does. Trump's approval rating has dipped to a new low as the Iran war is driving affordability concerns for Americans. As the lowest approval rating of Trump that the polling partnership has found since he returned for his second time. And that's specifically about their view on Trump's handling of inflation and rising prices. Only 21% of the people approved. That's not a good thing. You don't want to be with the 20%. You want to be with the 80%. Maybe somebody needs to explain that math to them. I guess, you know, he and his advisors are looking at it, goes, well, you know, there's a couple of different ways you can calculate percentage, right? These are the people telling us that he did a 600% reduction in prices. They're probably telling him that the 21% approval rating is a good thing. 2 months since the U.S. and Israel began launching strikes against Iran, Washington and Tehran have struggled to even get to the negotiating table. Everyday Americans are feeling the burden of the costly military campaign, writes the Independent out of the U.K. Diesel is up to $5.46 a gallon, which can lead to increased grocery prices, shipping costs, even the cost of homes and renovations, because the construction industry, as well as the farms, are very reliant on diesel fuel. Energy prices caused inflation in March to soar, but Trump has brushed it off as fake inflation. Yeah, fake inflation. He's a fake president. Everything this guy says is a lie. Even within one speech, he contradicts himself multiple times. 53% in the poll said the war in Iran has not been worth it. Trump has insisted that Iran poses an imminent threat to Americans. Again, weren't you bragging about completely annihilating their nuclear weapons? And their nuclear weapons were not a threat to us. They didn't have any way to deliver that. So now you've got everybody who has nuclear ambitions. The global energy order is breaking down. There's an accelerating shift from oil market structured around economic efficiency toward an oil market that is shaped by politics and conflict. Is that really what we want? Yeah, I mean, that's what Trump did with tariffs in general, right? He moved from an economy that was centered around economic efficiency to one that was going to be determined by politics and, of course, by conflict, as he threatened and went to war with everybody verbally and economically. Trump despises markets. He despises free markets. He despises free trade. He despises everything except his political dictates. A fractured OPEC, a blockaded Persian Gulf. The Iran war is scrambling the longstanding foundations of the oil market, ushering in a more fragmented, potentially more volatile energy world. The free flow of petroleum across oceans is out, and resource nationalism is in. And for all the people who think this is great, you know, we're now going to be the big supplier of oil. Is that right? Well, we're still, that's a good thing for the oil companies, perhaps. Maybe it's a good thing for the government. It's not a good thing for the average American consumer. We're going to pay a lot more for everything while these people make the profits. But you've got War Pete out there who is bragging about this.
It's also worth saying, this should not be America's fight alone. We barely use the Strait of Hormuz as a country. Our energy doesn't flow through there.
But our prices
we have
do.
Plenty of energy. Just look at the new global Congo line headed to Texas. A beautiful picture. Europe and Asia have benefited from our protection for decades, but the time for free riding is over. America and the free world deserve allies who are capable, who are loyal, and who understand that being an ally is not a one-way street. It's a two-way street. We are not counting on Europe, but they need the Strait of Hormuz much more than we do, and might want to start doing less talking and having less fancy conferences in Europe and get in a boat.
You get in a boat, he'll probably shoot you without warning and then circle back around and kill any survivors. This guy needs to do a little less talking, I think, because at least a little less boasting about all this stuff. Look, what Pete Hegseth and the Trump administration and some of these MAGA cheerleaders are selling you is a Petro version of the broken window fallacy. Oh, war is great because we go in and blow everything up. Now look at how it boosts the economy to go back and rebuild these buildings that we destroyed. No, that doesn't make us richer. Not at all. And this is not a good thing either. We may not be using oil that travels through the Strait of Hormuz, but guess what? If the people who are using it can't get it, that raises the price for all of us. We saw that with the Chevron executive when he was interviewed. He said, well, you know, it's a global market. You know, if the people in Europe show up at his door and want to pay more money for the oil that they don't have, they want to pay more for our oil so they have some, liquid petroleum natural gas, that's going to cause, that competition is going to raise the price for Americans and for all products. So, yeah, that is a stupid way to look at the economics of this. But this is a guy who doesn't understand the broken windows fallacy. This is a guy who only wants to break as many windows as he can. Even the GOP hawks are now alarmed over the Iran war fallout as the 60-day limit hits tomorrow. Mayday, mayday. We'll see what happens, but they're pretty confident that they're going to ignore whatever the law is, and they'll get whatever they want out of Congress. So,
yeah, I'm sure Trump is really sweating the fact that the Congress might not. Like, well, have they ever done it before? No, but you know, maybe this time they're not going.
No, they won't. They won't. There's been multiple attempts to stop this before this, always shut down. So I know they'll rubber stamp whatever he wants to do. Reports say the White House is preparing for an extended Hormuz blockade, at least months longer. There now appears to be a significant shift among Republicans underway, given that the 1973 War Powers Resolution requires a U.S. president must terminate unauthorized military operations within 60 days of initiating them. Again, we don't care about the Constitution, obviously. And when they look at this, they see the average price of a gallon of gas is at its highest level in 4 years. Like I said, 40% up since he started this insanity. This has triggered talk among GOP leaders, and listen to what they are saying here. You got people like Senator Curtis says, it's a big deal. There are a number of us having discussions about what that day means and what our response should be. They don't know, right? Senator Collins, 60 days is a trigger that requires Congress to act. Don Bacon, we haven't been doing combat for the last 2 weeks. I think it merits discussion, but in the end, I want us to finish the job. So, yeah, maybe we just deduct those ceasefire things and get another 2 weeks out there. Maybe we play that game. Senator Hawley says Rubio has been pretty careful to comply with the statute. My hope is that they will notify us that they are drawing down offensive operations. That's not going to happen. They've already put that out. Senator Murkowski says, you've got to talk to us. She warned, if that doesn't happen, you may see a change in the situation in Congress. So, yeah, flatter us, and we'll help you to do whatever you want. Then you got Senator Tillis, who says this is going to be weeks or months away from resolution, more likely months. So why not send a very clear signal to Iran? Let's authorize the war for another year. That's likely what you're going to get from these people. The statist,
well, it's probably going to happen anyway, so you might as well rubber stamp it, right?
That's right. Yeah, let's send a message to Iran. Let's tell them we're in it forever. Because, you know, that's the way we win wars, isn't it? We stay in Afghanistan for 20 years and then leave in a panic. That's the way we win wars, isn't it? High oil prices are a risk for Trump's fellow Republicans ahead of the midterm congressional elections in November, said Reuters. That absolutely is the truth. Meanwhile, we have airlines across Europe are saying they could, some of them, many of them, are circling the drain, ready to go out of business. But even the big guys are shutting down massive numbers of flights as they're looking at the fuel situation, both the cost and the availability. Airlines go bust two times a year in September and February. Airlines with weak liquidity positions will come under immense pressure in the September timeframe, they said. German carrier Lufthansa has cut 20,000 summer flights across Europe, saying that higher fuel costs have rendered many routes unprofitable. That's right. So when we look at this, jet fuel prices have doubled. You know, we look at gasoline prices, they've gone up by 40%. Diesel has gone up more. Jet fuel is the one that has increased the most. It has doubled, 100% increase. I have to explain that to people, the Trump administration and our KGU. Yeah, when it doubles, that's 100% increase. You can have more than 100% increase, as we're going to see with many products, thanks to Trump, but we're not going to see a 600% decrease of anything. So again, when we look at this, they really don't care. It doesn't affect them. He's just concerned about his bunker, right? This is the Hitler mentality, right? Trump is going to be raging in that ballroom bunker, and he doesn't really care what happens to the rest of us, whether we get bombed or whether the economy tanks. It's not his concern, really.
Well, that's what BBB stands for, Build Ballroom Bunker.
That's right. And then build back better after they've destroyed everything in the world. Well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about some other issues in the news, and I want to get to what is happening with OpenAI and their plans of global domination. We just had a trial that began between Elon Musk and Sam Altman at OpenAI, because remember, Musk was at OpenAI, and the whole purpose, as the name sounds, was they wanted to make this open source and things like that, and it was supposed to be a nonprofit. Sam Altman somehow maneuvered his way in, took control of the group, and turned it into a for-profit thing. And so there is a lawsuit that's going on between the two of them, and it's in its early stages, so there's not really anything to report yet. It's just that Elon Musk, when he refers to Sam Altman, he calls him Scam Altman. I think that is a spot-on nickname for Sam Altman. Everything he does is a scam. When you go back and look at the first time I ever saw this guy, he had this creepy orb that he was sending around. He had some kind of world coin thing that he was doing. If you would look into his orb, it could get a biometric reading on your retina, or I think it was in your eye. But basically, it would get a biometric reading of your eye and put that into his database, which he was then going to monetize. But in exchange, and as an incentive, he would give you some worthless crypto in a coin that he had, a meme coin that he had created.
Remember, folks, if the technomancer tells you to stare into his orb, don't do it.
That's right. Isn't it interesting when you look at Palantir and you look at Scam Altman, how they constantly got this thing, you know, look into this orb. Look into the Palantir. Look into my little thing here. And don't worry, we're going to take care of you. We're going to give you a little bit of a worthless meme coin for exchange. And I'm going to take that global database of billions of people that I hope to have, and I'm going to get rich off of that global database. I'll be selling your information everywhere. So
But before break, we have a lot of comments, and we have Guard Goldsmith saying, happy birthday, David. You are the best. Well,
thank you very much, Guard.
And from there on, also thank you for the tip. That is generous.
Thank you.
North American House Hippo says, when Mike Waltz says Iranian infrastructure is fair game because it was all built by their military. Remember all the dams and bridges and highways here in the USA built by the Army Corps of Engineers.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. So this is a thing. It's like, what makes them think that these chickens aren't going to come home to roost in America? I mean, the easiest thing in the world would be for somebody to come across the border and do a terrorist attack against our infrastructure. We've seen this going on, and I made that point about Iran from the very beginning because that's what we see continuously in the Russian and Ukraine situation, attacking each other's infrastructure. Iran's not stupid, and what is stupid is our foreign policy to initiate war is evil as well. Go ahead.
Yes, and we have Spencer DeLong gifted a sub on Kick. Thank you very much, Spencer DeLong. Atomic Citizen has gifted 5 subs. Thank you very much, Atomic Citizen. So if you're on Kick, check. You might have gotten a free sub. North American House Hippo says David's comparison of Melania Trump to Green Acres' Lisa Douglas is scarier than you think. It's only a matter of time before Melania shares her favorite hot water soup recipes. And a Syrian girl says, if we don't get rid of the Trump regime and fix the Iran problem soon, a lot of people are going to die in the cold next winter.
That's right. You know, when you look at this, and as I said, we don't have any good choices, right? You know, I can only think of one person who is usually right on the issues, and that's Thomas Massie. And they're after him as hard as they can go. But he can't change everything, and there's not any change or hope that's going to be coming out of Washington one way or the other. And so we have to try to stop what the Democrats are doing at the local and state level. We have to try to stop what the Trump administration is doing at the international level by stopping the Republicans. I've never voted for a Democrat in my life, and I'm not about to do that. I just can't bring myself to vote for evil. But I look at this, and it's like I'm keeping my fingers crossed that Trump gets impeached is all I can say.
The Democrats probably killed any chance of that with their last attempt.
Yeah.
Palm Beach Pete, spooky, has gifted 5 subs on Rumble. Isn't that the character they say is Jeffrey Epstein?
Yeah, that's right. It's the guy that looks like Jeffrey Epstein, and they swear that that's Jeffrey Epstein.
Apparently in the Rumble chat, we've got Epstein Island, we've got Palm Beach Pete. We've got a cast of characters. Junk Silver, thank you so much. That's very generous. Says, David, I've been hearing for a while that you were just weeks from having a birthday. How I wish I had heeded those warnings.
There we go. Yeah. It's a nuclear one as well. Karen told me this morning, you don't look a day over 70. I think, well, thank you. I feel like a day over 80, actually. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
But unlike most revolutions where the people rise against a real economic oppression, in our case here in Boston, we are fighting for purely an abstract principle.
Hear, hear. Hear, hear.
It is, however, not nearly so abstract as the young gentleman supposes. The issue involved here is one of monopoly. Hey! Today, the British government will monopolize the sale of tea in our country. Tomorrow, it will be something else.
Listening to The David Knight Show.
If you like the Eagles,
on a dark desert highway,
the Cars, and Huey Lewis in the News,
they say the hotter rock and roll is competing.
You'll love the Classic Hits channel at APS Radio. Download our app or listen now at APSradio.com.
Let's talk a little bit about the other side of the economy, the side of the economy that you can actually do something about, and that is to try to exit as much as you can their system of fiat currencies. We got Powell's final Federal Open Market Committee meeting sees most dissents in 34 years as the Fed Reserve keeps interest rates unchanged. Now, this is coming from Zero Hedge, and of course, everybody always focuses so much on the interest rates, and yet the reality is that what the Federal Reserve is doing, you know, are they going to have an easy interest rate policy? Well, take a look at what they're doing with the quantitative easing. And typically, nobody looks at that. And so they can increase the money supply, and they are doing it. And it really has had a huge uptick. They're going, and this is the way they're doing it. Instead of doing it with interest rates, they're doing it with quantitative easing. So they pointed out, they said, gold has been clubbed like a baby seal in the last couple of weeks, while stocks and oil have surged, with stocks ignoring the peril of oil. And again, to borrow a phrase from Alan Greenspan, irrational exuberance, I think he was the one who said that, that we see in the stock market. It absolutely is irrational. Saxo Bank said, summarized this very succinctly. They said, structural drivers that have driven gold in the last 2 years have remained in place, and they have actually strengthened. And we say this all the time. You know, we look at gold. Yes, it's doubled in price in the last couple of years, and things that have doubled it in price are all still there. None of those things have changed. The fundamentals have not changed. As a matter of fact, those fundamentals that were driving gold have actually strengthened. And so what we're seeing here is a market reaction that I think is detached from reality, just like I think we see the comments from Trump moving the markets. And, of course, you got people, whoever it is, when he's making these comments, somebody is placing bets on Polymarket. And then people figure out when he contradicts it himself just a little while after that and the market goes in the opposite direction, somebody's making a lot of money off of that. But you and I aren't going to make money by trying to time the markets. We have to look at what the long-term trends are and what the fundamentals are. And those things have not changed. They have only strengthened. During the last couple of years, Fed rate change expectations have swung violently from a full rate cut to a full rate hike and fallen back to a no change at all. And so the Fed doesn't need to cut rates today, says Zero Hedge, for monetary policy to get easier. And they don't even mention quantitative easing. What they're talking about is the fact that inflation expectations are rising so much that real rates have fallen to the lowest since November and are close to turning negative. And so when you look at this, you know, one of the things that happens when you look at the Federal Reserve's ability to affect the market, when they artificially lower the interest rates, that helps the federal government, it helps Trump, because that takes down the amount that they have to pay on the $40 trillion of debt that they have. But it doesn't really help us when we buy houses or credit cards or other things like that, especially houses, because people are looking, the short-term rates can be set by fiat by the Federal Reserve, but the long-term rates are still set by the marketplace. So you got to get a private bank or an investor who's going to loan you money for a 30-year period of time. They have to look at what they think inflation is going to be over that period of time. And if the Federal Reserve is lowering rates and creating inflation, that's why we have seen the Federal Reserve lower rates and we see home mortgages stay the same or go up, because the market determines that those policies are going to be inflationary, but they don't look at the quantitative easing that is happening there. Meanwhile, you got a Senate Republican saying the quiet part out loud. He says, Jerome Powell ought to just leave the Fed and cash in. He hasn't cashed in yet. He's got a net worth of over $75 million. I would say that's cashing in. But he says, yeah, he just leave the Fed and he can go work in the private sector or whatever, or who knows.
It's crazy that by our standards of corruption that, you know, Jerome Powell is nothing. You know, well, he hasn't even begun to loot.
Yeah, that's right. He'd get some serious money now. He's only got $75 million. Well,
what a popper.
Again, when you look at Trump coming after him, It was just a political persecution that he was doing. It was putting pressure on him to get him to lower the interest rates. You think Trump's going to get the new Fed chair to lower interest rates? You think he's going to be able to get the Federal Reserve in general to do that? He's always been able to do that in the past. When Powell would not lower the interest rates, he came after him for prosecution. And where did he turn to? He turned to Jeanine Pirro, the Fox News analyst. Just like Hegseth. And so she starts an investigation of him. And, over this remodeling of the Federal Reserve. And yeah, it is scandalous. I'm sure there's something there. If they're going to spend $2 billion remodeling a building, how in the world could that even be the case? Yet, Tom Tillis said, I'm not going to move to approve the new Fed chair until they stop this investigation of Powell, because he saw it as political warfare, as lawfare against him. And Powell said the same thing. He said, I'm not going to leave the Federal Reserve unless you stop this investigation. And so on Friday, Jeanine Pirro showed that this was just a political investigation. She ended it on Friday. So that clears the way now for Powell to leave and for the new guy to come in. And of course, Powell would not be the Fed chair, but he could stay on the board and be a thorn in Trump's side. Typically, what happens is they usually leave after they're no longer the chairman. But he had indicated he might stick around. So in announcing the conclusion of her investigation last week, Pirro noted that she had asked the Federal Inspector General to investigate the project, which was subject to cost overruns due to increased material and labor costs, among other reasons, according to the central bank. So again, try to walk this thing back. She was just doing his bidding and charging people with crimes just because Trump didn't like them. We see this over and over again. The closing of the probe then opened the door for Senator Tom Tillis to back the nomination of Kevin Warsh. Tillis had previously said he could not vote to move Warsh's nomination in the Banking Committee to the full Senate until the investigation had ended. So there we go. The Trump regime, yet again we see how they're nothing but a bunch of thugs, gangsters, and Fox News commentators.
Hard to say which one of those is worse.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we have in Fort Knox, an article from Mises.org asking about the gold in Fort Knox. We had this situation with France, and they said, well, we sold our gold that was being held in the U.S. vaults because we wanted to get it according to European standards. And a lot of people said, well, I think that's kind of phony because gold is gold. Well, it turns out that according to their own records, they believe that the gold that is in Fort Knox is not up to the quality of 0.999 fine gold or whatever, and that has now become the standard internationally for the gold coins that you get and all the rest of these things. That is the standard. But because they had confiscated gold, it really kind of goes back to the history of the Federal Reserve and FDR confiscating gold. It's all part of this corruption, and a corrupt government actually corrupted the quality of the gold, if it's even there, in Fort Knox. And, of course, that's the other part of this. There's been no audits about any of this stuff. And by their own admission, only about 17% of it is of the quality and purity that is something that is used internationally now. So there's an international standard of purity. This falls far short of it because they confiscated a lot of gold from Americans, melted it down, put it in their vaults, and even if it is still there, it is low quality. So the French Central Bank recently—
This gold is so low quality, it's only fit to be turned into sneakers. So don't worry, guys. I'm sure the next round of Trump sneakers will be hitting the shelves soon.
Well, they can use it for the ballroom or for some
That's
more
right.
statues
of
Trump.
They can plate
Trump.
All the toilets in the ballroom gold. That'll
That's
be great.
Right. That's right. Well, you never know how many statues Trump is going to need to have of himself. And so that might be the way that they use this stuff. America's gold is valued at $42 per ounce by statute. It's more than 100 times that in reality by the marketplace. According to the London Bullion Market Association, gold bars must contain 350 to 430 fine troy ounces and have a minimum fineness of 0.995 parts per thousand to be acceptable for international settlement. And the good delivery standards across the globe have been transitioning, however, to 9999 purity. You have Herman Cain would love that. He's all about the nines. Based on documents released during 2011 House Committee Financial Services hearing, we find that only around 17% of the gold held by the U.S. government in Fort Knox meets modern-day purity standards. Again, 64% of it is down. The standard is 995, and most of them are doing 999. But 64% of what they have in Fort Knox, they say, is between 899 and 901. And only 17% meets that. But then they pointed out, they said, keep in mind, we're operating on guesswork here because the U.S. government's gold holdings have not been audited since at least the 1970s. In 1974, the government put together a publicity stunt in the name of an audit. The U.S. Treasury opened only one of its 15 Fort Knox vault compartments. They opened it to politicians and reporters to view the gold and to confirm it's there. See, we got some gold. Now go away.
It's so odd that you'd ask about those other vaults.
That's been called an audit. And it was kind of like Geraldo Rivera at Al Capone's vault. Remember that? That was a big hype. That was before your time, Travis.
I know the story.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, yeah. I guess it's become a meme now with everybody. It was so funny. There's this big thing. We found a vault that belonged to Al Capone. Who knows what's in it? And they hyped that thing for weeks. And then they have the big reveal on live TV. And guess what's in it? Nothing. That's kind of what's going to happen.
The real question is how anyone thought there would be something. Surely he had companions, you know, that worked for him or something that knew the vault was there. Or at minimum, someone in the government got to his assets and snuck off with them.
At least the IRS got it, right? So none of the bars that were looked at, you know, they just opened the thing and look at it. See, there's gold. It looks like gold, doesn't it? None of the bars that are passed around have ever been matched to a serial number. None of them have been assayed. None of them have been tested for purity. And they haven't even verified how many they've got and their holdings. Following the 1974 publicity stunt, the U.S. Treasury says it conducted a multi-year process of opening and inventorying vault compartments and affixing new tamper evidence seals to the doors of each compartment upon completion. However, these so-called audits failed to meet the basic transparency or accounting standards. Some reports have gone missing. There's no record of comprehensive assaying and weighing or transactional history that is available to the public. Furthermore, there is evidence that seals on vault compartments have been broken over the years. Bars have been moved for unknown reasons. Seals have been reaffixed without fresh auditing. So maybe that's what he meant by time to cash in and check out. Stop by the vault on your way and grab some of this stuff. I know it's not up to the international standards, but it'll do in a pinch, right?
Just step on in, take a few bars on your way out of the Treasury, I suppose. You know,
don't you remember at the very beginning of the Trump regime when you had Trump and Musk were floating the stuff around saying, yeah, we're going to go audit Fort Knox? They just play people. It's a game, everything they say. So how did the U.S. end up holding so much of this? As they point out, you know, the unconstitutional confiscation by FDR, once they got this gold, they just melted it down. And back in that day, what was traveling around was not high purity. So generally, the coins that they were getting were about 90% pure. Private banks, along with the Federal Reserve, held a large number of coins because the Federal Reserve notes were redeemable for gold. So the government just melted them down, put them into bars, and they're supposedly sitting in the Fort Knox vaults, but we don't even know that.
What happens if you walk up to the Federal Reserve and try to redeem your dollars for gold now? Can you be like a, can you show up and just like, I'd like to trade this in, please?
Yeah, well, they'll give it to you. Maybe they give you the discount of the $44 per ounce, right? I'd like to buy the gold at $44 per ounce from the Federal Reserve. Maybe that's something they only offer for employees of the Federal Reserve. You get a Fed discount.
You sell out enough of your countrymen, you can get a huge discount on gold.
Yeah, that's what they mean by the discount rate. Well, Mises editor Ryan McMakin says the U.S. gold reserve is a legacy of theft and lies. Point out the gold reserve was never intended to be a static, untouchable hoard of the U.S. government. Matter of fact, they were just supposed—they were not supposed to print anything either. And so, when you look at it, this is a government that is so corrupt. They managed to not only create a worthless fiat currency, but they managed to even corrupt the gold that they hold. That's how they corrupt everything that they touch. I guess it's kind of the opposite of the Midas touch. Right? And so, again, you can get real gold, and you can hold it yourself. And you can do that at davidknight.gold. That'll take you to Tony Arterburn's Wise Wolf. Tony's not joining us today. He is traveling to and from a conference that he's going to. But he'll be with us next week. And just remember, you can do dollar cost averaging with Wise Wolf, the wolf pack that they have that's there. You can do dollar cost averaging. And right now things have calmed down, but that was a very important thing. You know, to do that over a period of years, it's a savings program. You can set this aside. Don't depend on the government's hoard. Have your own. Stack it yourself. And you can do that. Go to davidknight.gold so he knows that you're coming through us. And it'll take you right there to Wolfpack. And you can sign up for the, to Wise Wolf, I should say. And you can sign up for Wolfpack if you would like to. So let's take a quick break.
If you can go over the comments. We have comments. Yes, we have Cole360 says, "Happy birthday, DK." Funny how InfoWars is closing on DK's birthday.
Well, at the last minute, guess what? They pull that out. So yeah, fake news always about this stuff that's happening there. But yeah, you look at it, and I don't know what these people think they're going to do with that. I don't see how that's going to be something that's can be monetized at all. And it's not a lot of money either. I mean, they're looking at, I think it's $80,000+ a month to rent, to, you know, pay rent to have the access to the website. But, you know, it's going to be millions of dollars, but there's nowhere close to getting this $1.4 billion, you know. Maybe that's what Alex raised, but they're not going to pay that. They haven't paid him a cent as far as I could tell. Not a cent has gone to anybody out of this lawsuit, but Alex has used that large theoretical judgment. He's used that to raise a great deal of money, and who knows where that $9 million single transaction from Bitcoin that he talked about in the trial, who knows where that came from? I don't know, but anyway, don't know what's going to happen with them. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm Marty, says, "Take heart, DK. I'm several days over 80. I feel like 79.
That's great.
Pezzanovante 1776 says, "Ronald Lauder has served as president of the World Jewish Congress since 2007. At his WJC perch, Ronald Lauder has called for the criminalization of speech under the guise of calling speech with which he disagrees anti-Semitism."
Well, that is the standard approach that we see. And we've got a guy who is a U.S. senator who's talking about this Comey stuff. I'm going to get to that after the break. And what he's saying is, you know, there's hate speech. We got something's even worse than that. There's danger speech. He's actually trying to create some new category of evil speech that in order to come after Comey. The reality is, folks, that there is no speech from anybody about anything that is as dangerous as censorship. We should make a T-shirt out of that. There is no dangerous speech. There's no speech that is as dangerous as censorship is. That's the bottom line. We're going to talk about that when we come back.
And we have a Syrian girl says, "Problem with impeachment is who is waiting in the wings to take over. I really don't see any help coming to us until Christ comes to rule from the throne of his Father."
That's right. Yep. That's right. That's what our trust is in. And that's why we don't despair about this stuff. But we can do what we can do. And that is, again, with the right people, and it's not easy to get it done. I'm not saying that it is, and it's impossible in some jurisdictions. But if you've got the right people in place at the local and state level, you can have people who are going to stand in the gap and nullify some of this tyranny that is coming from Washington. The only good news is, of course, it'll be really difficult for us economically when this Ponzi scheme called the federal government and the Federal Reserve collapses. But if and when it does, That would break their power to bribe governments to do the wrong thing. They are not issuing orders in defiance of the 10th Amendment, really. What they're doing is they're bribing, this is what we saw throughout the lockdown, they're bribing state and local governments to do their bidding, just like they do for schools, and offering them a bribe, and then once they get hooked to it, they use it as blackmail. If you stop doing what you did to get the money, we're going to pull that money away, and people have gotten used to it at that point. They don't think they can live without it. That's the way they control people.
Yes, and we have Atomic Citizen 865 says, my father bought his first home for $47,000 with a 14.78% interest rate on a $2.75 an hour union pay wage. Those days are gone, folks.
Yeah, the problem is, you know, all these numbers change so radically, but when you start to look at the amount of time that you work, you know, for your mortgage or these other things, we break it down into the cost of your labor that goes into it. We're getting very poor based on government policies that are there. We're going to take a quick break. And I just want to remind everybody that Mary Ellen Moore at freemindfilms.com has graciously offered to match donations today, because we're getting at the end of the month, and we started the show at about 75% of the gas gauge, and so she was very kind to offer to do that. And just want to remind people that they have a several different documentaries that you can see at freemindfilms.com, and we had a trailer for, what was it called, Shadow Ring. Shadow Ring, thank you. And an excellent video. Of course, you can buy them there, or you can watch them for free with commercials. And they're very important and a very important tool to educate people. I think it's important for us to keep our ear to the ground and understand what's going on a day-to-day basis. But we have to understand the long-term context of all these things. And that's what Shadow Ring really lays out there. And she's got a lot of great people in that documentary. G. Edward Griffin is there. You got Gerald Celente. You got Chuck Baldwin. These people understand what the long-term perspective is. And we're going to take a look at the long-term perspective as well. When we come back, we're going to take a look at what's going on with OpenAI. We'll be right back, folks.
Real quickly, I just want to say thank you to DG8. He says, David, happy birthday and God bless you and your family. Let's all pray this country repents and accepts Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior.
Yes, yes.
And also an update from Jason Barker. Tony's traveling, but Jason and Ashley will be hosting Tony's show right after this.
Oh, cool.
So it'll still be going.
Okay, great, great. So right after this show, and that is on...
America Unplugged on Rumble.
On Rumble as well as on X, I think, yes, as well. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back, folks.
Listening to the David Knight Show.
Hear news now at APSradionews.com or get the APS Radio app and never miss another story.
Well, there was an interesting back and forth between CBS's Major Garrett interviewing Attorney General Todd Blanche, who just filed these charges against James Comey. And Major Garrett pointed out to him, he said, if you're going to say that 86 is a death threat. He goes, are you investigating Jack Posobiec? Because he had tweeted out before Comey did. He had tweeted out 8646, 46 being a reference to Biden. And why is that not a crime? Why are you not investigating that? You see, this is the reality that the MAGA people, and again, Todd Blanche just ignores, it's not at all the same thing. It's exactly the same thing. And these cheerleaders like Jack Posobiec, I remember when Trump was criticizing Canada and he was selling the lie that all this fentanyl was coming through Canada. Everybody knew that was a lie. But Jack Posobiec goes up to the American-Canadian border, this quiet little town, and he goes, look at this. There's no guards. There's no guard dogs. There's no fences. There's nothing here. And it's like, yeah, you want to turn this place into a police state? That's what your rhetoric is trying to do. And that's what this double standard is doing. There's no, you know, there's no absolute standard here. Yet again, this is a double standard. If it's my party, you can do whatever you want. If you're with the other guys, we're going to punish you. The Democrats are bad enough along those lines, and we saw that happening for the last 4 years. Rather than changing that, rather than trying to move to reform things, Trump has doubled down on this. So anyway, he points out Jack Posobiec put out the 8646, and he said, and he didn't take it down. Comey took it down. The bottom line is, I pointed out yesterday, if you go to all the online dictionaries, slang dictionaries, urban dictionaries, and all the rest of the stuff, Merriam-Webster as well, they all say 86 means to get rid of something, to take it off the menu. It goes back to the restaurants, the early 20th century. Walter Winchell talked about it. And it doesn't mean to kill somebody. It doesn't imply violence. What it means is getting rid of. And we need to get rid of Trump. And we are free to say that. Or just tell everybody that we live in a police state. Just go ahead and make the statement. Say the quiet part out loud. We see it happening. There's no question about it. So, again, he said, but his response was, well, we did a long investigation. We looked into this for a very, very long time. So it's like, so what did you find that changed the definition of 86? Did you investigate any dictionaries? No. And so, was anybody besides Kristi Noem stupid enough to say that this was a death threat? Just like she was stupid enough to accuse people of things that everybody could see they didn't do and what was happening in Minnesota. She and Trump were the only ones who were saying stuff like this. She and Trump are the only ones who were pushing that out there. But as I said before, we got a House Republican, Dan Muser from Pennsylvania. He says, there's something that we call dangerous speech. Well, I think our government, when it starts drawing lines, when it uses even the term hate speech, I think that's dangerous. But he says, no, this is worse than hate speech. He says, he criticized James Comey. He said, you have to understand that there's something called dangerous speak. You know, I can't find that in the dictionary. I can't find that in the Constitution either. I don't think there's any speech that is dangerous. I think the great danger is censorship. He says it's worse than hate speech. Well, all of these things are subjective, aren't they? And that's the problem with hate crimes. They're totally subjective. And we can see how they've been used to push a political agenda that ought to be categorically rejected. And yet you got Republicans. You would expect something like this coming from a Democrat. Democrats have gone down this route for a very long time. Now the Republicans are doing the same thing, becoming the Democrats, weaponizing government against speech. A new category of subjective tyranny and censorship. He said he knew exactly what that meant, said Trump. A child knows what it means. Well, Donald Trump doesn't have the intellect of a child. He uses the vocabulary of an 8-year-old. When you look at it, he doesn't understand what this is, he and Kristi Noem. So again, charges that he knowingly and willfully threatened to take the life of the president of the United States. That is the indictment. But Trump knowingly and willfully lies about everything. And I had a listener who sent an email. I meant to bring it with me and print it out, but I forgot to do it. But he pointed out, he said, David frequently says, thou shalt not kill. He goes, but actually it means shall not murder, right? And I thought that it was implied. I should be explicit about that. So let me clarify that. You know, when we talk about a justified war, it is justified to kill in self-defense. I've said that many times when I talk about it. But murder is something that is totally unjustified. An act of aggression and the ending of a life and killing is something that God has delegated to government to do. They do not bear the sword in vain. I support in principle capital punishment, but in practice, I don't trust our government to do a fair trial. And so under some very rare circumstances, I guess if there's a lot of witnesses, a preponderance of evidence, I would support a death penalty because I'm not opposed to it in principle. But that is a situation of the government killing when somebody else has murdered. And so there's a distinction with that. But I thought that was implied with my broader discussion about when a war is justified and when it is not. But I'll just clarify that there. That's what I meant by it. Pam Bondi, meanwhile, is hit with contempt charges after illegally defying the Epstein subpoena. And so again, will anyone who talks about Trump's long, long history of public debauchery with Jeffrey Epstein, will we now be guilty of dangerous speech? Because if people don't like Trump, they might do something, right? Well, it is what it is. Deal with it. You've got a dangerous president who is setting dangerous precedents. And we have the right and the duty to speak out about that. So again, Bondi illegally defied our committee, skipped her deposition, and has refused to cooperate. Regardless of her job title, her testimony and her cooperation are crucial. The survivors of Epstein's abuse deserve answers, and the American people deserve the truth. Again, Trump is going to move heaven and earth to go after his enemies, people he doesn't like, people who, in many cases, unjustly came after him. He's not going to push reform, but he wants to get even. And he's going to come after James Comey, but he's going to protect the Epstein elite because he's one of them. Oversight Democrats are taking the lead on holding Bondi in contempt because Chairman Comer is trying to run out the clock, and we refuse to let this administration stop our investigation. But in reality, they don't have the power to do anything. That really resides in the Department of Justice. So Trump's Department of Justice has argued that Bondi doesn't have to testify because she's no longer the Attorney General. Talk to Bannon about that, right? He thought that because at one point in time he was in the Trump administration, he could invoke executive privilege. No, you can't. That doesn't mean anything. The question is, what does she know? And the question is, what did she do? Those are things that follow her, whether she is in government or not. As I said before, we got Al Gore, who is flipping yet again. He's saying we're looking at a possible new ice age. Al Gore warned a Hollywood audience, and again, he's referring to one of their fictional films that showed an ice age. And so on the basis of that, and on the basis of a tabloid newspaper article, he's now pushing a different kind of fear. He's saying that the Gulf Stream might collapse within the next 25 years, leading to an abrupt and devastating new ice age.
Did he just pull up The Day After Tomorrow and show it to people? Like, look, this is what's going to happen.
Let me see what the movie was here. The movie was, The Day After Tomorrow. That's it. You got it.
Yep. Uh-huh.
You've seen that garbage?
Oh, yeah. It's a fairly entertaining movie, but it is literally all about, you know, global warming actually causes everything to get cool because it melts the polar ice caps, thereby cooling the oceans, causing the Gulf Stream to collapse, and that causes a superstorm, which freezes everything, basically.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, the first 8 years or so of the climate MacGuffin were all about a new ice age, and what they were selling was depopulation and control, population control in both senses of the word. We're going to dictate what you can and cannot do, as we've seen so many times, right? And we also want to reduce the number of people that are out there. So they went with that for about the first 8 years. Then all of a sudden, just like that, they flipped the lie. They flipped the MacGuffin. And now it's not a new ice age, but now it's global warming. They went with that for decades of doomsday predictions. And when all those were failing, they came back and said, all right, you're not going to call it global warming anymore. We'll call it climate change. We don't know what's going to happen, and we're not going to make these kind of predictions anymore, but you should be afraid that it's going to change somehow. And if it does change, it's going to be your fault. So we got to control what you are doing. That is our entree there. And of course, Al Gore is old school. He feels like he's got to make predictions. And he's been doing this kind of thing. This goes back to 2009, as a matter of fact, where he was telling this group of lies. December 14th, 2009.
To capture the astonishment that the experts in the science of ice felt when they saw this minimum in 2005, which meant that the amount of ice that had melted, it's been roughly the size of the continental United States minus an area roughly the size of Arizona, nothing against Arizona. But the amount that melted in 2005 was equivalent to an area covering everything east of the Mississippi River in the United States. Then, when the real shock to the scientists came was in 2007, some of the models suggest to Dr. Maslowski that there is a 75% chance that the entire North Polar ice cap during some of the summer months could be completely ice-free within the next 5 to 7 years. And Bob used a figure of 2030.
Yeah, well, the bottom line is that that professor that he mentioned by name there, Maslowski, said afterwards, I don't know where he came up with that number of 75%. He just made this up. If it was Trump, Trump would have said 92%, right? That's what he usually resorts to when he's lying because it sounds precise. 75% sounds like a ballpark figure, right? That's what Al Gore used. And so we see these guys constantly science, science, science. It's all just like Fauci, isn't it? And I don't know what this really is. I mean, I'm just a politician out here, but the scientists say, and based on what these scientists say, and the scientists are saying, I don't know where you got that stuff from. In reality, the kind of ice melt that Al Gore warns about is projected to take centuries or even thousands of years, causing millimeters per year of ocean rise, which would be barely noticeable. Certainly not catastrophic. It's interesting, though, that Gore has jumped on the idea of a new ice age. You know, I think his superpower is putting people to sleep. I nearly fell asleep when I looked at the original clip. I cut that minute out of it, but it was difficult to get through. He is one of the most boring speakers I've ever seen anywhere. So I guess people look at it and it's like, well, he's mentioning scientists out here, and this is really boring, and he throws out a couple of numbers, so it must be real, I guess. I don't know.
That's the plan. They just get you lulled into this sort of dreamlike state, and you just start accepting everything Al Gore has to say. You're just like, oh, okay.
That's right. Yes,
sure, yeah, Al Gore, whatever you say.
Well, as this article from Zero Hedge points out, global warming science relies on rigged data window, the temperature history that only goes back to the 1880s. And again, they're going to disregard all evidence of longer periods of time. As a matter of fact, the truth is the Earth has been far warmer, rarely cooler than the temperatures are today. And as I said before, it's the same thing they do when they push their wars. And remember, this climate MacGuffin is a war against us. Certainly is. But when they push a war against Iran, what do? They cherry pick a date that they go back to that is tied to a particular event to create a fake trend. The climate change grift is a creation of the Club of Rome from the 1970s to the 1990s. It was a UN-associated group of prominent elites. Again, he was speaking at the UNCCC, the UN Conference on Climate Change stuff, I think is what it's called. It's a UN agenda, you know, just like the war on drugs and so many other things that vex our lives, to fabricate a rationale for global governance and for depopulation. And so they can keep changing this MacGuffin And as I said, the real clue is that whether they're talking about a climate MacGuffin or a COVID MacGuffin, they can constantly adjust that narrative, whatever the MacGuffin is, to scare people. They constantly change it, but notice how the solution remains the same. Whether it's going to be global warming or global cooling or whether it's going to be a pandemic, the solution is to get you locked down under lock and key, to take things away from you, to enslave you. That's always the clue that it's a MacGuffin. So Al Gore has long been a member of the Club of Rome. According to the group's own documentation, he often cites the Club of Rome's 1972 report called The Limits of Growth as a basis for his ideological beliefs. And they are ideological. They are not scientific. Well, as ridiculous as Al Gore was, here's an even more ridiculous story. I saw this. I just had to talk about it. This is a man who dug up his sister's body and took it to the bank. It's the exact opposite of a weekend at Bernie's. They're going around with a dead body to try to convince people he's still alive. He was trying to get money out of the bank, and the bank was standing on a paperwork issue. Said, we're not going to give you any of that money unless you give us a death certificate. He's like from this area of India where they have a lot of very poor areas. They have difficulty getting birth certificates, death certificates, and things like that. So he got frustrated, and he decided he'd do his own habeas corpus, I guess. Where is the body? And so he went in carrying the body into the bank. And they said, as he came in, TV networks broadcast footage of him carrying what appeared to be a corpse, partially wrapped in plastic, with skeletal legs visible and slung over his shoulder. This created a highly distressing situation at the premises, said the bank officer. He said the claim will be settled once the death certificate is submitted. They are not going to change that bureaucracy once the paperwork, nothing else matters to them. Registration of birth and death is very difficult to get in some areas that are poor in India. Well, we're going to take a break, and before we run out of time, I want to come back and talk about what is going on with OpenAI and their agenda. But we want to thank Mary Ellen Moore at freemindfilms.com, who is matching funds today, and just remind you of the documentaries that you can find there. One of them, Shadow Ring, we were talking about earlier, and it shows these long-term moves, just like Al Gore, long-term moves to establish global governance, to push us into false flag wars and the rest of the stuff. You can see these films for free with commercials at freemindfilms.com, or you can purchase them there and pass them around to other people to help to educate people that are there. So I want to thank her for matching the funds today.
And we also have comments. We have Gold and Green. Thank you very much for the tip. He says, happy birthday, David. Hope you're taking plenty of time to celebrate and relax with the family. A wonderful spring season to you. God bless.
Well, thank you. We have pre-recorded a couple of interviews for tomorrow. I think you're really going to enjoy them. Very, very interesting. One guy who is an ATF agent of all things. And we had a lot of broad-ranging discussion about prohibition, because they get into cigarette, tobacco prohibition, as well as gun prohibition. There was some stuff in there about civil asset forfeiture. You know what I think about it. So I didn't challenge him. I just let him put out his viewpoint of it. I think it's very interesting. But he worked for them for a couple of decades, had a very interesting undercover investigation. In other words, he's not part of the regulatory people that go around and look at the books of gun stores and shut them down, or, you know, measuring the length of your barrel. But he was out there working with people to try to infiltrate these gangs, like the Gambino crime family was one of them. And the informant that he was using got betrayed by the government, surprise, surprise. And he wrote a book about that betrayal. And he also wrote another book about all the different businesses that they created, storefronts in various communities, so they could entrap people that were there. That is most likely going to be turned into a series, a TV series. And so the talks are still ongoing, and you know how these things work out sometime. But it would be an excellent series. It's an excellent book, and it's a very interesting discussion. Of course, we also have Sheriff Mack, and Sheriff Mack, we broadened that out from local control, importance of sheriffs and judges. We got an interesting story about a conflict between a sheriff and a judge. But we also talked about the JFK assassination in light of the security issues at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And so a couple of good interviews coming up tomorrow. Join us tomorrow as well. Like, yes. Anything else you want to say before we go to break?
Yes. For Love of the Road is gifted 10 subs on Rumble and 13 subs on Kick. So thank you very much for Love of the Road.
Thank you very much. Yes. And of course, you can see the donation that he gave us, and probably need to get that a little bit closer to you because it's hard to read it in the background there. But it's an illuminated sign with a David Knight Show, and that was a gift of for the Love of the Road, too. We really do appreciate
that.
Yes,
we do. Thank you. And Jason Barker, thank you very much. Very generous. Says, happy birthday, David, and thank you, Mary Ellen Moore, for matching the tips today.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
And, of course, we have we have homesteadproducts.shop wishing you a happy birthday.
Well,
and
thank you.
Of course, want to let everyone know that they do have a sale going on right now for the hydration electrolyte drink mix, organic acai berry flavor.
Acai, I think, is the way you pronounce that.
I've heard it both ways.
Oh, yeah?
I choose the one that's more ridiculous, most likely to be true.
That's a good way to put it, yeah. Well, anyway, that's a really, however you pronounce it, that is a very nutritious berry.
Yes.
And I didn't know that it was also a hydration electrolyte. That's really good to know because, you know, you go out and you get Gatorade or some of these other things, they're loaded with all kinds of other stuff that you don't really want to have. So that's a great thing to have.
Yes. And
love the natural products that he's got there.
Yeah, they have really good products. Go check this out. If you're It's not just enough to be drinking water, and it's not just enough to be getting electrolytes. You want electrolytes that have potassium in it as well, because potassium actually helps the water get into your cells. You can drink a ton of water, but without those two things, you're not going to be hydrated on the cellular level. So go check it out.
Yes. All right. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back to talk about OpenAI.
Song I wrote, you might want to hear it in your pod. You'll owe nothing and be happy. Ain't got no cash, ain't got no car, but 24 booster shots in your arm. Owe nothing, be happy. You can't even buy shit in the store because of your low social credit score. Owe nothing. Be happy. You'll owe nothing and be happy. Be happy and eat the bugs.
Whether you're feeling like the blues or bluegrass, APS Radio has you covered. Check out a wide variety of channels on our app at APSradio.com.
All right, welcome back. We have OpenAI not only involved in a lawsuit right now with Elon Musk, but Sam Altman and his company have put out several documents talking about their principles and how wonderful superintelligence that they're designing is going to be and how it is going to serve mankind. Heard that before, haven't we? Industrial policy for the intelligence age. Ideas on keeping people first. You know, when I look at that, the intelligence age, what does that bring to mind? You know, I look at that and I think of surveillance, right? Like the intelligence community is going to be watching everything that you do. That's really, I think, the hallmark of OpenAI. And of course, there is no mention at all anywhere throughout this. He talks about all kinds of ways that, well, you know, it's going to take everybody's jobs, but we'll set up universal basic income. We'll create sovereign wealth funds and we'll do all this kind of stuff. Don't worry. You know, you'll be happy. You'll own nothing, but you'll be happy. Nowhere in any of this is there any sense or discussion of how this stuff will be abused. Nothing at all about individual liberty. They start out their document by saying in just a few years, AI has progressed from systems capable of narrow tasks to models that can perform general tasks people used to need hours to do. Now we are beginning a transition towards superintelligence. He defines that as AI systems capable of outperforming the smartest humans, even when they are assisted by AI. So even with AI, we're not going to be as smart as AI. Think about that, the logical, the illogical statement that we have there. He said, the promise of superintelligence is extraordinary. Just as electricity transformed homes, the combustion engine remade mobility, and mass production lowered the cost of essential goods, superintelligence will speed up scientific and medical breakthroughs, significantly increase productivity, lower costs for families by making essential goods cheaper, and open the way for entirely new forms of work, creativity, and entrepreneurship. Nothing at all about the opportunity for the police to set up a surveillance state, for the government to audit every aspect of your life constantly in the smallest details. Oh, nothing at all about that. We all saw that starting to be rolled out with Doge when that came through. And so he throws out, here's his three different areas that he breaks this down to, which kind of reminded me of something. See if it reminds you of anything. We're going to share prosperity broadly, mitigate risks, and democratize access and agency. I looked at this and I thought, you know, that kind of sounds to me like when Satan tempted Christ. What did he do? He says, first of all, he looks at prosperity broadly. He says, command these stones be made bread, right? And that's basically what he's telling you, that the AI is going to turn the stones to bread. But they always appeal to your love of money and prosperity, don't they? The next thing is mitigate risk. You know, the next thing that Satan said to him is, yeah, throw yourself down. God will send his angels to bear you up, right? Well, that's, you know, mitigate risk. Don't worry about it. Just go fast and break things, and AI will clean up the mess for us. And then the final one is democratic access and agency. You know, you too can live like a king. You too can have slaves. We're going to provide you with robotic slaves and artificial intelligence to do your work for you. You'll live like a king. You'll be like a king, which was the third thing that Satan tempted Christ with, you know, this kind of kingship power that is there. So they're constantly laying these types of things out. They said we need to make sure that data centers don't raise the electric rates for individuals. And we need to have some common sense AI regulation. You know, whenever you hear somebody talk about common sense regulation, what they're saying is, I want to do something radically prohibitive. I want to give the government all new powers. It's just common sense regulation, right? You hear that about gun control. You hear that about everything as a catchphrase. And so, you know, we're going to have some common sense AI regulation. We're going to make sure that not only are they not going to raise your prices for electricity at these data centers, but they're actually going to be creating jobs and paying taxes. Well, we've seen one particular case. I didn't go into it in detail. $77 million at a data center that was going to create one job. Yeah, one job. In normal times, he said, the case for letting markets work on their own is very strong. But see, these are not normal times. You know, I love the free market, but in this particular case, we just can't rely on the free market. So let's bring in some industrial policy. That's the title of the paper here. Well, industrial policy, what he means by that is government picking winners and losers. We've seen that before, haven't we? Crony capitalism, corruption, fascism. That's what the government picking winners and losers looks like. But he said, no, industrial policy can play an important role when market forces alone are not sufficient. We just can't trust the marketplace. You know, this is a guy who famously went to Congress, he and another CEO of an AI company, and they said, this is just so important, it's going to be the lifeblood of your empire, right? You're going to have this, because if you don't and the other guys do, they are going to be the ones who are going to control everything. So you're going to have, it's very important. It's so important that you've got to subsidize it, give us money. But it's also so dangerous that only people like us can be entrusted with it. That is always the message. You know, we can't trust the free market. We can't trust our competitors, but you can trust us. As a matter of fact, you have to give us the people's money. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you so much for your support. Have a good day. And thank you for all the well wishes.
Yes, well, thank you all very much. And do not obey. Thank you for that. He says, well, you know, the world has become a big casino. And that was Professor Trump.
Yeah. And he knows how to bankrupt casinos, and he's going to bankrupt the entire casino world that he's created.
And thank you again, everyone, for all the well wishes. I know there's so many that I missed, but there were just too many for me to get them all and write them all down. So thank you all. And once more, happy birthday. Hope you all have a wonderful rest of your day.
Without any more fanfare, thank you very much.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.